The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is July 22nd, 2015, and we are sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials. Dr. Wong's a regular here every month. Go out to www.docsprefer.com. Tell him Eric sent you. He's sponsoring me for Iceland, too. What can I say? And he's helped me out with his shoulder big time. Go out and check it out. I know people from the show have contacted him, and they're very happy with him, and I couldn't be happier to help everybody out. So go out to www.docsprefer.com. Secondly, go out to this is local. This is Hart's Collision. They're out in East Greenbush. Go out there and check them out. Alex is a very good friend of mine, and for anybody that hasn't heard me talk about I'm training his son, little Alex, right now. He's 14 years old. He's over 6 feet tall already. He's a basketball player, and he's kind of getting knocked around a little bit. So at 145, I can see that. And he's been here 9 weeks. He's already gained 6 pounds, and he looks good. And I think this kid's going to become my protege because looks like he wants to go in a strongman contest. So he and I are going to train this winter, if that's true. And yours truly here is going to get that kid up to about 180 or 190 pounds, and we're going to have some fun. I love people that really put out, got goals, and really want to go out and smoke it. That's the way to go. So go out to heartscollision.com. Call them at 518-477-7937. Tell Alex and Lori Eric sent you. Next, we have another sponsor of the show. Sorenex, they sent me a beautiful trap bar, diamond bar they call it, which fits in the power rack, and you can press it. I wanted one like that. Bert said, look, we're going to send you one. We want to help you out with Iceland. I can't thank him and Richard enough. Go out to sorenex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Tell them we sent you. Also, too, Superman Herbs. I've got Logan Christopher on this afternoon. Big sponsor for Iceland, too, him and his family. I thank them, too. I've got some great people, man, around me. I'm very blessed. Next, go out to Fiorello Barbell Co. Click on the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle. It's a free ebook I did. A lot of thought in it. Short paragraphs, no gloss, no BS, all basic stuff. Check out, too, our winner circle. That's 12 modules I just finished up. 27 to 32 minutes. About the will, the beginning, power rack, sandbag domination, the return of iron boots. It's all out there. Use it. You can take it and plug it in. The programs, you can take pieces of it, whatever you want to do. But we're going to grow that database immense. We're going to have a million people here. I'm telling you, believe me when I say it. We're on the way. Next, we have got, let me think here. I think we've got one more here. Oh, sponsorship. How can I forget that? That's what we're reading here. Go out to FiorelloBarbellCo.com, click sponsorship, $300 a month. You're getting 7 to 12 podcasts a week. Most people are lucky if they do one. I know it's very cheap. If you look, most of them are $700 to $5,000 a month. We're on our way up. We need your support. We want to support you. We want to help you get your brand out there. Chris Bigelow does all the branding. That's extra. But the form is out there. Fill it out. Get on board. Let's work together for the next 25 years. We are a success. I'm telling you. You know, like this, like our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. Faith, belief, commitment. What else can I tell you? All right? And last but not least, Chris Bigelow does all the magic. We're doing tons of it right now. MonsterDevelopment.com, 800-687-1609. That seemed like that was a long time. Well, today, we got one of my favorites on, Mike Gillette. Mike's an author. He was a bodyguard. He'll always be a bodyguard, though, I'm sure. He's done some record-setting strongman. He was an Army paratrooper. And we talked about this on the last show about his product that's out. He's the author of strengthpsychology.com. It's all about building a tough mind, mental toughness. And today we're going to talk about goals. And I think Mike and I are going to have a rip-roaring show for sure, because obviously this is something that he's grown up with this. I've grown up with it a lot too. Things around you do make you tougher and stronger. And, you know, he's had quite a bit in his life. I am nowhere near what he's dealt with, but I've dealt with my own stuff too. And it does make you a stronger individual, but you got to learn how to discover it. And this kind of toughness has got to be built. Mike, welcome to Motivation and Muscle, sir.
Thank you, Eric. Great to be with you.
I'm glad to have you. Why don't you give everybody a short bio of yourself? I know you've been on here a few times, but we want to keep acclimating and introducing everybody to our audience, especially our new people that are coming in.
Okay. My professional background really sort of started when I was still kind of a young guy. I entered military service in 1982, and with a temporary goal in mind, I was looking to get some life experience and some money for college. That blossomed into a meaningful relationship with the Army. The Army and I got on quite well. I did well. Primarily because there were some really amazing guys who sort of took an interest in me and helped further my development. And I completed my term of enlistment, enrolled in college at the University of Arizona with a ROTC scholarship as I was going to get commissioned as an officer at the end of my degree program, and then go right back into the Army. And I was planning on spending the rest of my professional days jumping out of airplanes, living in the woods, and doing cool guy things. However, my first semester at college, I was involved in a climbing accident, broke my back, my ankles, and was medically processed out of military service at that point, because the prognosis was I would walk again, I would never run. There was no way I was ever going to be able to withstand the rigors of military service, jump out of airplanes, etc. So I was sort of cast adrift for a period of time, about 4.5 years, where I didn't have a fallback plan that was really interesting to me. I mean, I was in college now. I was married when I was in college. We had a baby when I was still on active duty. So, I mean, I had real life responsibilities to kind of factor into my life plans. And I was doing fine scholastically, and I, you know, which was a challenge because I had to work. I was working nearly full-time hours while always carrying a full-time academic load. You know, desperate times can get a lot out of a person. My wife was working at the time. You know, it was everybody was hustling. And despite the fact that I was doing what a lot of people do, you know, going to college and, you know, working closer and closer to my degree, the options that laid in front of me were not compelling. You know, originally I'd gotten into the military for college money because I wanted to be a cop. That was my life's plan. But once in the military, that sort of became the focal point. I'd never been in an environment like that, and it really spoke to me. So those were the types of things that I had wanted to do, and now I was confronted with this situation where I was no longer a physical person. I mean, I was a shell of my former self. Everything hurt all the time. I kept trying to get back into shape, as they call it, unsuccessfully. I would join a gym. I would train for a week or two. The pain would become so unbearable that I would have to stop. And that sequence played out over and over. And most normal people would have stopped. Notice the careful use of the phrase normal. And people will frequently say when they hear that part of my story, gosh, Mike, you know, you're so dedicated, you're so motivated. And I may be. I certainly feel that way now, but at the time, I'm not sure where the motivation line stopped and the desperation line started. And I'm not even sure that there is a difference between those two. My motivation level is just different. You know, when I want to do something, I am seized with a very powerful need to do that thing. And I think that's why I've been able to do some of the things that I've done over the years. So then we get past that 4.5 year period, and the last time I joined a gym, you know, for what I swore was the last time, was the time that I gradually, slowly started making progress. And I continued making progress to the point where I thought I might have a legitimate shot at least at law enforcement. So that is where I sort of got back on the horse, was as a cop in late 1989. And things just went really, really well for me in that realm. I pushed myself hard. Things happened. I found aspects of the job that I was good at and pursued very aggressively. Primarily, I was good at training. I had gone to a training course, which equipped me with the credentials to train other police officers. Next thing I know, I'm a police academy instructor, and I'm at the state academy, and then I start circling further and further away from home. I pick up more certifications. Those that my agency won't send me to, I take vacation time and pay for myself. I was sending myself to police schools all over the United States. Concurrent with that, I was continuing to grow my martial arts resume. Same kind of thing. I was training one-on-one with people who I became aware of that I thought had something to offer me, and I thought it was important for my development as a trainer. So all of those things were going on. They all seemed very connected in my mind, and eventually I left law enforcement in 2001 so that I could be involved in training full time, which is really where I felt my gifts were and, you know, certainly where my interests were. And it was a short time later that 9/11 took place. 9/11 had a huge impact on my professional development, which is a weird kind of negative fact of my resume, but it is accurate. I did a lot of what you would characterize as post 9/11 type training work. I worked with the airline industry more so than any other person. I developed training curriculum specifically for the Department of Homeland Security, which, you know, exists to this day. The, you know, material I've developed is still being trained, you know, via the TSA, via DHS. I executed vulnerability assessments on behalf of the DHS. And then you alluded to it, that from 2006 through the beginning of 2012, I worked primarily as a bodyguard and a bodyguard trainer for a number of executives that people have heard of. That was interesting work, and I was working with very smart, very talented people, but the difficulty for me was that there were still other things outside of that realm that I wanted to accomplish, and I knew that the only way to accomplish those things was to remove myself from that work. That work is extremely time intensive. It's very unpredictable, considerable amounts of travel. If there is a book in you or some DVDs you want to put out, it will never happen if you are the team lead, you know, for a full-time client. You know, traveling with the client, the family, you know, in dealing with all of those issues. So I had to step away from that, which was scary because the money was pretty good. And doing what I wanted to do, there was no money yet because I was starting from scratch in a sense. So from 2012 until today, I have been working, you know, in the coaching realm, the self-improvement realm, developing products for people, for folks that I can't meet and work with one-on-one, and doing group workshops and doing private performance coaching. And along the way, I've had some, you know, interesting adventures getting involved in the world of feats of strength, meeting a lot of the people that you know. It started for me back in 2008, you know, being mentored by Dennis Rogers, and then many of the people that he has sort of, you know, connected with, and everybody kind of knows everybody in that community, and there's been a tremendous amount of support for me because I came into that very late. I was 46, and anyone who's seen a picture of me, I do not look like I'm built for that stuff in the first place. So it's that was an unexpected little tangent in my professional development, but it's been extremely rewarding on a variety of levels and continues to inform some of the things that I do when I work with other people. So a lot of these things seem very disparate and disconnected. To me, they are not. They are all connected. Yeah. So everything I do, you know, as far as teaching and demonstrating mind power, you know, the things that I do on the physical development side, the things I do in a coaching context, all of that, you know, writing, you name it, it's all connected. And I can see strands of it that go all the way back to my time in the military, my time before that when I was preparing for the military, when I was taking my first martial arts classes in 1981. Everything sort of connects. So that's sort of who I am and how I look at the world.
No, you're surprised. I mean, because things, you know, even my past, I look at things sometimes and I can connect it right up to what I'm doing. And it's like back then I never would have even thought that I'd be where I am today. That, I mean, most people can't, but the thing is, everything that you're talking about, there's strands going out to everything. I mean, hey, look, I'm training one of my best friend's sons here. I mean, would I fathom that 25 years ago? Never. I mean, everything's kind of laid at your plate, and it just comes in all different variations. And I found that, you know, one thing might not work here, and then, you know, 6 months down the road, you're like, I remember doing that. Now I'm going to do this, and that's a lot of it. But today's show, we're going to get into goals.
Excellent.
And I know we've talked about this a lot. I mean, and we hear this a lot. We hear it in the media a ton. This one's going to do this. This one's going to do that. Are they going to make it? Are they going to drop out? And we've seen, I'm sure you've seen plenty of it, and I have too, Mike. First question is, and it's just going to be a basic question. Define goal to you, to everybody out in motivation and muscle. What? How do you define goal, if we can do that in a very simplistic way?
Well, I'm not going to use sort of the textbook answer. I'm going to say that a goal is it's a milestone. It's mm-hmm. it's a thing that you want to. It's a place you want to get to, and that place may be internal. That place may be some sort of external tangible reward. You know, I want to make $150K a year, right. You know, within the next 3 years. You know, it could be something like that, which is great because that's easy to quantify. You know, I want to be, you know, executive vice president of my company in the next 5 years. You know, I want to go back to school and get an MBA. A goal is a thing you want. And the problem I see with a lot of people with respect to goals is we all talk about goals, but we don't talk about them well. And what I mean by that is how many people – and this is such a cliche example, but it's so universal that I kind of default to it because everybody either relates to it personally or they know a guy or a girl. And how many people say, man, I need to get back in shape?
Mm-hmm.
And – everybody says that, and almost nobody does anything about it. Now, we do sort of oftentimes. I mean, why are there so many infomercials about diet products, exercise programs, or some combination thereof? If you look at the company Beachbody, which had a product called Beachbody, which evolved into P90X, which evolved into, I think, Insanity or something like that, and there are probably like a half a dozen other things I don't even know because I don't watch cable TV. But they come on at a particular time of day, usually when you know you might have just gone to the refrigerator to get a big bowl of something that maybe you shouldn't have because you feel crappy. And there are all of these, you know, hyper lean, bouncing, you know, dudes and dudettes, and they mm-hmm. look amazing, and the camera angles are cool, and there's smoke, and hey, it's just a DVD. Just follow along, you'll be like us. You know, we usually will take that step. What's the cliche about? You know, everybody's got a really expensive clothes hanger in their garage, their basement, or their guest room, and that's, you know, once upon a time it was something called a Solo Flex. There's been like a million variations of that since then. You know, a lot of people have that device. Look at the gym industry. The number of members at any commercial gym versus the number of people who actually go to the gym, the differential is astonishing. Yeah, I mean, if you're in the gym industry, you know this, and you kind of count on it, because it's great to have all those people paying and not actually showing up, because that provides more room for the people that do. So we a goal is a thing that we want, but it's seldom realized because we seldom want it enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all fallen prey, and this is not a recent thing. I mean, if you go back and look at advertising, you know, from 100 years ago, you know, from magazines and newspaper ads and whatnot, there have always been miracle pills. There has always been snake oil. There's always been some amazing miracle device that promises miraculous results with little to no effort. So it seems like that's a product of our immediate gratification culture. But we've been like this for a while.
Yes.
And that I think is where the short circuit is. The idea that there is a magic bullet, that is what gets in the way of goals. A culture that produces honorable mention ribbons gets in the way of goals because you don't have to work to get a ribbon.
No,
you used to have to work to get a ribbon. And you know, if you weren't good at something, it was evident. You know, because people were a lot less shy. Now, was that the right way to handle that? I can't tell you. But people had a much more objective picture of where they were. And that's why we need goals. We need goals to improve ourselves. We need goals to, offer, incentives, short-term incentives, long-term incentives. So a goal is that thing that you want. And an accomplished goal is something that you wanted a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my definition.
It's very simplistic because, you know, you made that comment, which is great. You know, everybody needs to have a ribbon. I mean, I've got nieces and nephews that play baseball. Everybody's got to get on the field. You know, I mean, look, I'm all for I'm not out to hurt any kid or any adult, all right? But let's face facts, man. Was it 1% maybe is going to be a superstar of every sport, okay? Longevity for these sports, maybe you're lucky. I mean, 3 to 5 years if you play baseball, you might be one of the guys that got lucky and played 20 years, et cetera, et cetera. But the idea with goals is what I find from my perspective, especially dealing with clients and stuff. And I believe this truthfully, not unless you're demented. I think most people come in with good intentions. I really do. But let's talk now 3 months down the road. Are they even still there? And if they are still there, how are they mentally functioning? You know, what have you done or tried to do, point them in the right direction? Has it worked or has it not worked? And are you going to be a person, and this is where I have trouble with all this, Mike. Everybody likes to make money. Like you said in the beginning of the show, you started from a seedling just like me. You know, I had a very good job. I've gone through almost everything to make this whole thing happen here. And I won't take your money. All right? If I don't think we're working out or I don't think you're producing and I've given you adequate time, you're gone. And I don't know a lot of people that will do that because if some of my friends were here right now, there's a gentleman I know where I used to work in IT, and he was out looking at the site and he registered for the ebook and he's got a son that's around 13 or 14, plays football up in one of the suburban schools, real good school, winners every year, a little overweight, probably needs some work. And he's like, you know, says to this guy, you know, would Eric take my son on? Well, number one, you're asking the wrong guy. And number two, the first thing Dennis said to him is, you know, I would contact him, but I'll tell you right now, I'll give you the first bullet point on him. If you show up late, he won't even talk to you. So when we're talking goals here, which I think what you hit was perfect, real simplistic, and I'm of that belief in basic now more than ever. I just don't think if you can't cut it, I know with me, you're not hanging around anymore. And, you know, when you're talking about the gym fees, these guys are smiling from ear to ear because, hey, they're getting paid. They don't care. And I understand you got overhead. I do too, just like you. But I'm of the notion is I'm not going to take your damn money and go somewhere else. So with me, goals are, you know, we're expanding into all kinds of things. I've had people here. I had that guy who was 70 years old that couldn't even twist the top off a pickle jar. Obviously, he could take them and smash them in pieces with his hands after I got done with them. And that was basically using a grip machine. I didn't want to go nuts on them other than squeezing balls, tennis balls, softballs at all different points, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing that got him out of here more than anything, I could not change his attitude about constantly coming out and calling himself a fat boy. Even though I had knocked almost 50 pounds off his very heavy frame, and he had the stomach surgery and all that crazy stuff done. Eventually, I told him to leave, and I'll tell you why. This is an area I train in. This is my house here. We don't bring that kind of negativity here. And I know people say, oh, that word's overused. BS, man. When you go out in my garage or you go outside my driveway, it's like a testosterone-filled pool. And everything out there is goal-oriented, pushed to the limit, and anybody that comes up here will tell you that they knew it was serious business, especially the last third of the 95 feet, when you've got multiple monster stones to one side, you got an 800-plus tire on one side of the garage wall and a 300-plus on the other. It's serious business with serious goal-oriented achievement here. So I know I kind of went on a little long, but you get my point where I'm coming from here?
Oh, absolutely. And the thing that I will probably always come back to if we're talking about goals is you can't divorce that from motivation. If we were talking about motivation, we were talking about motivation, I think, during our last conversation quite a bit.
Yeah.
You can't really talk about motivation in isolation from something. Motivation is that X factor that takes us to our goals.
Well, when you – okay, I mean, especially you train a lot of kids, and that's a very interesting prospect here because, as we know, kids kind of come with a whole different view. I mean, you know, unless they've been doing this stuff for a long time, and we all know, you know, the parents sometimes can just be so overbearing and the kids get injured or they get overused, et cetera, et cetera. But in your line, especially with the younger children, and I know goals, I mean, you don't want to be all heavy-handed on, and a lot of these kids are very mature in some ways, but they're still children. How do you set up for a child coming in, you know? And, you know, Alex is 14, but you've got younger, especially I've seen the females, the younger girls. How do you motivate these children, or are they so motivated, and they almost kind of have an innate intelligence where – maybe they're not sure of everything, but they kind of got their goal in sight. How do you spell that out for them? How do you reinforce that? Or do you kind of just let it grow? You know, it's like a small plant when we grow in the garden. You know, we water it, the sun hits it, and it starts to kind of take on a whole persona of its own. So how do you do that when you're dealing with that, Mike?
Eric, listening to you spin the metaphors, my goodness.
Am I good, though?
Oh,
am I good?
Oh, absolutely. Love it.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Yes, I do work with young people, and it has taught me some things. The thing that people need to understand right off the bat is I work – almost exclusively, and this wasn't intentional when I started. In fact, working with young people wasn't really a strategic thing. It just sort of happened. Almost exclusively with females. So that right there is a pretty specific context. But even more specifically, beyond working with just females, almost exclusively gymnasts. Mm-hmm. And I started working with a particular gymnastics club just a little over 3 years ago. And at that time, I didn't have a real frame of reference for gymnastics beyond everything that I was observing at this particular club. What I didn't know at the time is that this club was one of the best clubs in the U.S. So what I saw as normal day in, day out was not actually normal. You know, it's wherever you go, your mileage may vary. And so I was internalizing what I thought normal was. Now, I'm mentioning this because After about a year or so, I started having opportunities to travel and do what I was doing with that original club, you know, and in sort of a touring or guest coach sort of capacity. So 2013, I started going to some other clubs elsewhere in the country, college clubs in some cases, like, you know, D2, D3. Yep. And what I realized right away is that the club that I had come from was not at all normal, or I should say not at all typical. In terms of the culture that was fostered, in terms of who the athletes were. And that's a key thing right off the bat. You understand that, you know, coaching is a huge piece. You know, you were talking about there's a particular type of person you want to train yep. with. There's a particular type of person that you don't want. And if you have very high standards, what's nice about that is the right people tend to recognize that, and the right people who are right for someplace else recognize that too. They may be wrong for you. They may be right for someplace else. Because at the end of the day, not everybody is suited or inclined to pursue a particular thing, whether it's athletics or music or art, with the same degree of intensity. Mm-hmm. So that was the first key lesson for me, is that there are people involved in that sport. Now, even though that is, you know, statistically the most mechanically complex sport, one of the most physically dangerous sports in terms of the implications of injury, even the mundane injuries are so routine that, you know, it's like football that you play year round. You're always hurt. Every one of those kids are hurt. And I frequently post, you know, little video clips of kids training with a cast on, you know, with a boot on, just, you know, really to sort of show adults that they need to not be quite so lame, because, you know, somewhere there's a 13-year-old who's training her butt off and she will kill you. You know, point blank, these kids are tough. Now, why are they tough? They're tough for a couple of reasons. Number one, there is a correlation between how we think and who we are physically. One of my key operating principles is the body is the mind is the body. You know, so I mean, there are people, and you know them, that are extremely well developed physically, that are the proverbial meathead. They're not firing on all cylinders from the neck up, and mostly because, you know, I think most of us all have about the same ability to be bright, but if you're not interested in that, you won't become that. You know, just like we can strengthen ourselves, we can strengthen our minds as well. And there are guys out there, and girls too, who just don't think that's a big deal. Conversely, there are a lot of people who are extremely cerebral, who are very neglectful of their physical selves. I think in both cases, you have a person who is really out of balance, and they're not going to be comfortable. They're not going to be happy. They're not going to be able to enjoy life fully until they can get closer to that balanced sort of approach to living. So the mind is the body. The body is the mind. If you are a gymnast at the club that I have had this ongoing relationship with, you have a particular attitude about yourself. You understand that there are high expectations. And one of my favorite things about the gym is the way that they develop accountability with their athletes. And it happens at a young age, and it's fostered all the way till, you know, most of these kids walk out, you know, to their, you know, Division I full ride scholarship, is the accountability piece. Yep. Every season, they have goals. Not goals that the coach said, okay, you're going to be doing X, Y, and Z at the end of the season. What do you want to do? Mm-hmm. What's important to you? What's it going to take from you to get there? How are we going to build a plan for you to do what you say you want to do? It's all about the individual. Now, of course, they're being, you know, very strategically guided through that process because they're kids. and they need good coaching. But part of that good coaching is creating a sense of ownership about a person's destiny in terms of what we're talking about today, which is accomplishing goals. And that is really a beautiful thing to watch. Now, that's not anything that I am connected to. I am not a tactical instructor as far as gymnastics is concerned. Right. That is not my role. My role is to simply make those girls as physically and mentally strong as they can possibly be. Now, we don't spend a lot of time doing elaborate mind coaching sessions or anything. So the way that I basically accomplish that is we start where we start physically, and we build from there. They see, they understand mathematically how they are getting stronger. Now, of course, if you have Mike Gillette, who some people legitimately feel is crazy, screaming at you, and you're an impressionable, you know, kid ages 8 to 18, and that crazy guy is telling you, you are not like normal people. You are stronger than them. You're a freak of nature. You're a mutant. And you hear that day in and day out, and you start to see how physically strong you can get and do crazy things that normal people can't do. You start to believe it.
Oh, yeah.
And when these kids come into a meet, and what's interesting about this program and in high-level programs in general, they don't compete in their neighborhoods. A lot of these kids are on airplanes when they're in season on the weekend, you know, flying all across the country because that's where they have to go to find somebody, you know, worthy of their time.
Yeah.
And when they stride in and they're matching outfits, it's scary. They've got so much vibe. I mean, and some of them are little, and of course they're gymnasts, right? So they're all tiny, but they have so much swagger. You know, they're smiling and they look cute and everything, but behind that smile, man, steel, absolute steel. And you know that's a physical thing, and it's a mental thing, and it is the result of self-belief. The belief of trusted mentors, because you know they believe their coaches, and when the coaches says you've got this, they know that their coaches are not just blowing self-esteem building steam into their face. You know, it's legitimate because they have experienced the success, the progression in the gym. How do I build all of that? Well, I'm a part of that machine when we're talking about kids. But getting back to your point, I have had an opportunity to do ongoing work with a couple of other clubs. Some I've declined outright. Others I've tried a little bit, and it was such not the right fit that I discontinued that arrangement.
As
politely and professionally as I could, because if I'm not with like-minded people, and through gymnastics, I learned that like-minded people may be girls, and they may be nine. Yeah. If you're a killer, I can relate to you, and vice versa. And just like you need things to be a certain way when you train people, or it's not a good fit. And if it's not a good fit, why would you do it?
Well, it's because, this is what I get from people, especially right now. Well, it pays the bills. Let me tell you something, Mike, and I've had good people around me my whole life, you know, your parents, obviously, you know, your mentors and stuff, but I've done a lot of this stuff on my own. I'm not beating my chest either. I've put myself in physical and mental situations, especially the last time in Iceland, we could have been killed for sure with the weather we came up against, and you know what? This was my verbiage back to Dennis. It was like, you got to get in the car. He says, we could get killed in this storm. And I said to him like this, and I'm going to have to use some French here. I was like, fuck this. I said, if something happens to me, call my family, tell them what happened and have me buried here. And I'll tell you why. Because my whole thing was to get back, to be committed and not leave here one way or another. Even if I lifted the stone, I couldn't get around, I couldn't even see, it was so bad. But I had to get there. I had to do that. Well, I didn't get it this time either. Last time was due to injury. But I made the effort, I went, I was ready, and at that point I was ready to give my life. And I don't say that lightheartedly either, because I'm not that kind of guy. I'm not a bragger. I don't care really what people think. The people I feel important that think highly of me is what I care about. I did that. And I don't regret it. I regret what happened with the weather, but it was another voyage into a place that I absolutely love, into a place that I could maybe live the rest of my life there. And you know what? I went and tried something that most of the world will never touch again. And I wasn't afraid of failure. I wasn't afraid of somebody saying, oh, you wasted your money and your time. I don't care. What's important is no matter what your goal is and whatever you are, as my college professor Frank Klein used to always say in other books I've seen, I was a heat-seeking missile that day, man. I had water running down the back of my collar on my shirt, my flannel shirt. Picture a garden hose stuffed down the back of your shirt and filling your back full of water, all right? That was some of the stuff I was contending with besides everything else. And you know what? It was good. Just like those little gymnasts you got. You looked at my eyes that day, they looked like dark steel. They looked like a great white shark. Go watch a great white shark just before he bites something. They're black as doll's eyes, and they spin right over white. That's what I was like that day. And I sit here talking to you. I swear to God, I could take something and break it in half right now. That's what it's about. That's the challenge. That's the commitment I live with every day now to get back there, to improve and to show myself and Iceland that I'm worthy of that stone and I can walk 50 meters with it. And that's where I'll leave it, and I'll go right back to you with that. If you're going to examine me right now, you might have got the full page right out of the doctor's book there.
I think I did, in a sense. And I think it's highly instructive to anyone listening to this conversation, because I think for any of us, you know, I used the term balance earlier, and I mm-hmm. think balance is important. And people may think that sounds kind of weak and new agey coming from somebody who looks like me. But you know, I've always been a big advocate of what I refer to as the situational personality.
Yep.
Because you can only operate you know, RPM wise in the red for so long before
right.
the engine burns up. And many of us have to learn that lesson the hard way. I am one of those people. So mm-hmm. pay attention to the old guy when he says stuff like that. Now, here's what I was hearing in this conversation, because one of the reasons I like talking to you is there you have a comfort about you that I can relate to. And I think it is the comfort that comes from people who know themselves. Mm-hmm. And people who know themselves, who aren't defensive, who aren't insecure, are really the only kinds of people I like to spend any time around. Because I don't like all of the dancing and the artifice that a lot of people are sort of captive to, whether they realize it or not. Now, when you and I are talking, we're usually pretty laid back. But when you started talking about that experience a moment ago, everything changed. I could hear it in you. You know, it was creeping up, the intensity, that burn. And what that was you kind of reconnecting, you know, mentally and then emotionally with A, you know, previous experiences, and B, how you want that experience to play out in the future. It's something mm-hmm. that is important to you, and I could hear it. And I think anyone listening to this conversation heard it too. And that is really personifying motivation in action. You know, hearing people who are passionate. We talked about passion a lot in the past, which, you know, is very important, particularly when we're talking about motivation in general. You have to emotionally engage with your goals, otherwise they typically don't take place. So that was really a cool thing to hear you describe. You know, when anyone describes what makes them tick and you hear that, it's cool to hear. I think it's because it's communicable in a sense. Mm-hmm. And it gets into sort of a fuzzy area, which is, you know, I like hanging out with Eric because he motivates me. Mm-hmm. Now people say that, Mike, so you motivate me, or I want you to motivate me. And that's a misunderstanding. I mean, it's an understandable thing, but it's a misunderstanding because the motivation doesn't come from you to someone else. Motivation is like a virus. It's they see it in you, and then they catch a little bit. But it every sort of virus manifests uniquely based on the biochemistry of the individual experiencing it, and it sort of occurs with the other person. So it's not something that you're consciously doing. You can't, if I don't want to come to your gym and work out because it's uncomfortable or I think you're scary, I don't want to do it. If I'm trying to get you to quit smoking cigarettes and you don't want to quit smoking cigarettes, that's not going to be successful. I can't motivate you to do that until you decide that something is important. It's not important. We just heard you talk about something that was very important, and in hearing that was important, I think, just in a general sense. So those are my observations on motivation a little bit. And we're getting a little bit off of the goal specificity discussion.
Okay, well, let's go right
into it. That is related. I thought it was worth a mention.
Well, I mean, let's go right into what we were talking about previously with you sending me some stuff to look at. I mean, I know you're going to go right in with that. And I think these five bullet points, especially that you got up here, I mean, I we're going to touch on all of them. But, before we hit this too, when I told you that just now, I try to share these things with people in a way. I'm a big believer in pusher, obviously. You've talked to me enough online. I'm a very goal-oriented guy. It's a funny thing. I've got a lot of mixed stuff about all that. We can always talk about this on another show because I don't want to get off, but it is pertinent to this. Some things for me, in a lot of ways, are just innate with me. It seems to be something you and I were talking about strands, how, 20 years ago, I never thought I'd ever be coaching one of my best friend's sons. There's a strand, though, because I have a strand to his father. There's all these different things. But with me, Mike, at times, I almost feel like I've delivered these things to me. They were coming all along, if that makes sense to you. Or something, whether you believe in God, and I'm a big believer in faith and all that, because I think faith is so important to everything you do. A lot of these things, they happen. I'm like, something? I could have swore I thought of this before, and things of that nature. And my personality is a personality that can rub on people, that I never push my stuff with anybody. If somebody asks me, hey, what do? You lift stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it's fine. But usually, no matter, you and I know, you go to a party or anything, if people want to approach you, a lot of times they're going to ask you, do you lift weights or do you do this and that, okay? That's okay. At times I screw with them and tell them no, and they get this crazy look on their face. But that's neither here nor there. The point I'm trying to make here with goals and everything else, in my life and the challenges I've had and the things I've conquered and the things I'm still conquering and the enjoyment I get out of this, I do feel some of this stuff, I don't know, do I want to say it was preset in me, in my DNA? I don't know. I don't know if I can put a thumb on it, but what I want to say to you is, a lot of these things I feel that have always been in me. It was just something that triggered it, got me to bring it out. It's almost like that lion that's been sitting in me forever just came roaring out of me. My favorite superhero, the Incredible Hulk, since a kid. Why did I like the Hulk? I don't know. I guess it was just the size of him, the sheer aggression, the terror. Those things. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of people describe a similar phenomenon. There I was, and suddenly I became really enamored with, really interested in doing X, Y, or Z. The more I did it, the more I realized it was always kind of there. It felt so natural and so right for me to be doing this thing. I think that's legitimate. And sometimes you know, let's use kind of a good story problem example. It would be reasonable for people to expect you to gravitate towards, you know, extreme physicality.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it's science.
Yep.
However, if you look at particularly if you could find them, and there's very few around, by virtue of the life I led as a kid, if you saw old pictures of me, mm-hmm. you would never, and I mean never, all capital letters, presume that I would do anything physical, mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm still a very average sized person. You know, I'm just, mm-hmm. I always tell people I'm big on the inside,
yes.
it, which is mostly attitudinal, of course. And yet, for me, when I started exploring, you know, the physical side of myself, it yep. felt right. It felt like yeah. the thing to do. So despite the fact that it may not have appeared, you know, natural to outsiders, it felt extremely natural and correct on the inside.
Yeah.
And
I can totally identify with that totally.
Yeah. And for me, that it was kind of a pendulum response, because my pendulum had been pegged way on one side. And yeah. that was, I believe, a long period of motivation gathering.
Yeah. Yep.
That is
yep.
why, you know, being me, doing the things that I do at age 53, yeah. when everyone says, seriously, when are you going to stop doing that crazy stuff? And yeah. I said, well, I'm sure I'll die eventually. and probably then. You know, because in the meantime, I have no interest in what people often refer to as, you know, acting one's age. What is that? That's, you know, conforming to some, you know, yeah. average norm sort of, who cares?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You're already exceeding norms. You've been exceeding norms for a long time. Why wouldn't anyone want to exceed norms? So the being true to oneself, I think yeah. is a real thing. And yep. everyone's truth is a little bit different, of course, you know, so we have to be, you know, mindful of that. And again, that kind of comes to motivation. I think that's why you cannot superimpose your attitudes or worldview onto someone else. You can force it for a while, and maybe yeah. they can force doing it for a while, but it will never feel right to them. They nope. will, and most importantly, they will never own the outcome. It's not
no.
there.
No.
It's yours.
Yeah.
You know, and
yep.
you see that a lot with youth sports. We were using that example earlier. And that's one yep. of the reasons why I so love the club that I've been connected to, is because yep. that phenomenon doesn't exist. Those kids have their own goals.
Yeah.
And
you got winners. You got winners.
Yeah. And
winners.
That's what they're working towards.
And, you know, quickly, and then we'll get right into this. You know, Jimmy, my brother, everybody knows he died of muscular dystrophy. That was as a kid, you don't realize it. That was a very big defining moment in my makeup. And I was angry a lot of times, you know, especially after he died. It was very hard on my parents, and I credit them with giving us such a good home. Never, you know, Jimmy was always fine mentally right to the end. You know, never gave him up. But I'll tell you, Mike, we used to take him everywhere with us. It was, you never know he was in a wheelchair. And, you know, I've told you this before, and I'll never, you know, I just can never get this out of my mind. It's like, no matter what we were playing, you know, he'd be sitting there, big grin on his face, yelling. And I used to just sit there and watch him sometimes, say, how does he do that? Just such a unique individual, just such a blessed little boy. I mean, he might have not had a lot of things I did, but by God, he had more on the inside than I'll ever have. But what that did to me is it created a physicality in me. Like, and I don't want this to sound mean either, but as a kid, you think of a lot of things. And I can remember Mike saying, I never want to be like that. And I knew I didn't have muscular dystrophy, but the fear, and this goes with goals, there's a lot of fear in this. The fear was always, am I going to end up like that? And You look at all my brothers and my sister. Every one of them is physical, whether it's boxing, weightlifting, martial arts, or add the two and two together. I've tried to talk to them about it. It's still a very tight subject in a lot of ways, and they don't say much in a lot of respect where I'm very vocal about it. But it had an impression on me, and the best way I could say it's just picture watching a cattle getting branded. I have a brand in my head that, like you, I'm never giving this up until they plant me in a hole. I'm getting more extreme with things. I've got plans 2 years down the road. I'm getting into more stuff. It's not my nature, man, and it's going to have to be God that'll kill me, because otherwise I'm going to keep going. So I didn't want to get off point here, but Jimmy is and will always be, I think, my primer. You know, like they did with the Hulk when they gammed him, gave him the gamma. The primer is what didn't kill him. It's the same thing with him. He's like my primer. And I always feel he's on my shoulder all the time, no matter how bad things get. But that's who I look for my solace all the time when I'm feeling like, okay, are we going to get through this 100-degree workout like the other day out in the garage, et cetera, et cetera. So let's just go right into what we were talking about, and I didn't mean to get off point.
No, that is extremely relevant, and personally, I always like it when you talk about Jimmy. You know, I almost kind of feel like I know him in a way, because you talk about him a lot, and I think it's important because – it's your catalyst. I'll use a non-superhero term. And, you know, I have my catalyst. And I think the reason that we are who we are is because our catalysts are very clear to us. They're very strong. Yeah. And being very connected to that catalyst, I think, is important to people, or important for people, rather, for goal attainment. So yep. One of the things I thought would be helpful for us to talk about, Eric, is and because I talk about this in the workbook that accompanies my recently released DVD set. You mentioned it earlier, the Psychology of Strength program, which is doing really, really well. Now, that kind of sounds like a self-serving statement to make, but what's interesting about that is that it's been one of the most successful products released by a company that's been around for 15 years, whose products have previously all been about improving your bench press, you know, making your muscles big, you know, getting a six pack. And I mean, hey, there's, you know, those are all awesome. And those are important goals for a lot of people, but they're not mental goals necessarily, yep. You know, specifically. And when you see so many people respond to a program that is, you know, really about just trying to get connected to your mind and to use your mind more strategically towards achieving goals is really a cool thing. Because that means people are getting it. And, of course, you know, the company that I released this through, they do a very good job of explaining all of that because that's what they do. But it's really been sort of an interesting thing to see, because it took me a while to kind of identify these types of strategies as important. One of the things that I talk about a lot is goal setting, to the extent that I lay out a whole process for – establishing goals, figuring out if they're productive goals or less than productive, and how to tweak them so that they are, the times that you may need to change goals. It gets into that pretty exhaustively. But one of the things that is in there is a term that a lot of people are actually familiar with, but it's helpful, so I include it. And it's what are referred to as SMART goals. And SMART is actually an acronym. And it breaks down to the words specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time dependent. So a SMART goal is something that is A, specific, which simply means that you can define it. We talked a little bit about that earlier in our conversation. You know, it's getting in shape. Well, what is that? If you don't talk about it beyond that, it's not specific enough. It's meaningless. So you need to have concrete outcomes. You know, you've got a very specific, quantifiable goal you're working towards right now. That makes it easier to develop a plan to get there. People who say things, I need to eat better. Well, what is that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you can't drill down, you're not going to be successful with it. So that's specific refers to that. What is it that you want specifically? And then the next element is measurable. Another way to describe that would be quantifiable. You know, you have to be able to have performance parameters so that you know when you get there. And the next one is attainable. Okay, that means attainable for you. You know, there are things that I can do that maybe other people can't do. There are things other people can do that I cannot. So if it's a goal that is not attainable, yep. If it's outside of, you know, if my goals have anything to do with dunking basketballs, I may have some frustration ahead.
Yep.
Yeah. That's less likely for me. Then relevant, and that's an interesting one. And maybe relevant is not the right word for most people, but it starts with an R and it works in the acronym. But relevant really means that it's meaningful to you. And that gets back to the whole motivation piece. Yeah. So specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and the last one is time dependent. And it's the reason why making general statements such as, I need to get in shape, or I should really start eating better. When?
Mm-hmm.
By when? How do you know when it's, you know, it's so that's really the end piece. So specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time dependent, meaning that there is a time frame that you can attach to it so that you'll know A, if you're making progress, B, if you've gotten there or not. Now, a lot of people refer to this SMART goal acronym, or mnemonic, if you like to use that word, because it makes you sound even smarter. That's a term that means using a word or some device to help you remember something, mnemonic. The Q is silent. I'm joking. There's no Q. And the SMART goals model came from research that started in the late 60s. There were a couple of psychologists, Edwin Locke and Gary Latham, that spent considerable amount of time researching motivation, goal setting. And it first started to manifest in academic circles in 1968, and was Locke who published an academic article entitled Toward a Theory of Task Motivation and Incentives. And that's how you title things when you're an egghead. But there were some elements to that that basically, you know, clear goals and appropriate feedback is what motivates people. And working towards a goal also serves as a source of motivation, which in turn improves your performance. Now, they were really looking at it in terms of, you know, how can a workplace or an organization sort of improve performance across the board? You know, what types of mechanisms can be established so that a work team or an entire workforce can work more productively or more effectively, which is sort of a different collective context than what you and I are talking about, because we typically talk about the individual. You know, yeah. What is this person that we're working with? Sometimes the person we're working with is us. You know, what is it that we need to do to be more effective? Now, if anyone really wants to dig into this, and this is – it's an amazing book. And the book is – it's like almost 550 pages, and it's the book that Locke and Latham published in 1990. And that means that they were studying it before 1968. They continued to study all of this, you know, for 25 or so years before they wrote their first book. Now, they have published other books that aren't quite as big and scary, but it's an amazing book if you can force yourself to get through it. But if you're interested in goal setting, the book is called A Theory of Goal Setting and Task Performance, and the cheapest I've seen it on Amazon is $89.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely worth the time. It's one of those things you won't get through it in a night. But if you're a coach, man, yep. There is so much good info in that. But if you don't want to spend the $89, and actually I've seen copies go for a lot more, the five pieces that we sort of allude to in the SMART model, but what they have established, they've got different terms that should be present when you're considering goals or establishing a plan of attack to achieve your goals. And the first one is your goal needs to have clarity. Okay, which really speaks to specificity again, but it needs to be absolutely clear. And the next one I really like is that a An effective goal has to be challenging, which means that if it's too easy, the motivational element of your character will not be engaged. Mm-hmm. It's not, I'll get to that. Some things we can do, we just don't want to do. And that's different. I don't want to start on my taxes. I know I can get through it. I just don't want to do it because it's tedious. That's mm-hmm. different than doing something you've never done before, can probably do, but it's going to be a lot of work. That's a goal like that is going to start to engage you in ways that are emotional. And when you engage with things emotionally and gets back to the whole passion aspect, that's when things can happen that really sort of push you from where you are today, to a better version of you in the future. So the third element is commitment, mm-hmm. which is really sort of the commitment is not necessarily motivation. You can be motivated, you can want something, but commitment, I use a phrase that we used oftentimes in the military, discipline.
Yep.
And discipline generally means doing the stuff that you know you need to do that nobody likes to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it is oftentimes the person who can exhibit commitment or discipline who wins the prize, who gets stuff done.
Yep.
And then the next one is feedback. And that's important. When you're working towards your goals, your physical goals, you are lucky in that you are working in a universe that's mathematically quantifiable. Mm-hmm. in terms of feedback, are you making progress? Are the poundages going up? However, you have some biofeedback that also has to be taken into account because there is a cost to everything that you do when you train, in terms of wear and tear, mm-hmm. stressing the mechanism. So you also have to pay attention to the biofeedback and not the mathematical feedback, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and totally. We know a lot of people who tend to ignore the biofeedback piece, and you can do that, but there's a time frame. You can only do it so long. And sometimes it's okay to do it if you know that you're doing it. If it's getting close to Iceland time, you may not have a choice about backing off.
Exactly.
Because I am peaking right now. Everything is exactly to plan, with the exception of the fact that some things hurt.
Yeah.
But as long as you understand it, you're not blinding yourself to that. Physical pain and emotions don't have to run the show, but you have to acknowledge them.
Yep.
If you don't acknowledge them, you will know it on a subconscious level. You cannot lie to yourself. Exactly. And people who do are building a castle on quicksand.
Yep.
That there is not a strong foundation there. And, things can crack and sort of unravel oftentimes at the worst possible time.
Yep.
So clarity, challenge, commitment, feedback, the perpetual evaluation of your progress, and then the last one, task complexity, which is actually perhaps confusing. They use, Locke and Latham use the term task complexity as a means to describe things which are inherently, too complex or beyond your capability. So when people using the SMART goals model refer to as attainable, is this thing attainable? They're talking about, is the task too complex for it to be attainable? Mm-hmm. have you put in place performance criteria that you're not going to be able to meet?
Mm-hmm.
So those are sort of the steps or the elements, components. It doesn't really matter in what order you look at those or factor those into establishing a goal. But the main thing to a goal is different than a thought. A thought is, it sure would be nice to be able to, bench 500 raw.
Sure,
that's a nice
sure.
thought. It's not a goal until you give it the specificity, the quantifiability, the time frames. You've assessed yourself as in terms of potentiality, in meeting that goal, and then you write it down. Now it's a goal, mm-hmm. but you're still not there yet because you don't have a plan. But mm-hmm. once you have a goal, you can construct your plan, And then you can evaluate your plan as you go. That's the feedback component. You can make adjustments as necessary. But until we write things down, you know, that's writing things down is what I call the doing part of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else came up with that. I just don't remember who. Otherwise, I would acknowledge them because I think it's a brilliant little phrase. But writing things down is the doing part of thinking. We think a lot of great sounding thoughts. But, you know, most people tend to stop right there. It's, you know, it's not enough to think those. Good intentions are great. You know, well-executed plans are much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I always have a little recorder with me, Mike, and I keep it in my pocket because there's no way if I come up with a good idea, I'm going to remember it when I get home.
Yeah.
So I speak stuff all into it all the time.
That's excellent. I'm gonna share an anecdote and then we can wrap up. But on that, for a long time, I was convinced that when I would wake up in the middle of the night, I would have these great ideas.
Yep.
And they would be so potentially profound and earth shattering that of course I would remember them in the morning.
Okay.
And I remember numerous times waking up in the morning desperately trying to remember the brilliant insight I had at 3 in the morning, and I was not recalling these things. So I made the decision that I'm going to keep a notebook and a pen right on the nightstand.
Yes,
next
sir.
Time I wake up and have one of these great ideas, I'm going to write it down before I fall back asleep.
Yep.
And I remember the first time I did this. I woke up. You know, drink of water, whatever, you know, go back to the bedroom. I have the great idea and I write it down and I'm easily able to go back to sleep because now I don't have to sort of ponder it and try to figure out how I'm going to remember it. I wake up the next day. I look at the notebook. Oh, yeah, I wrote something down last night. I can't wait to see what it is. Yeah. And it's a couple of words. And, Eric, I could not make heads or tails. I had no idea what I was even talking about. It was a very humbling moment. And, of course, I had to confront the fact that, you know, maybe I haven't even been having really good ideas in the middle of the night. Maybe they've just been completely random thoughts. So, I had made the decision that I was going to write them down. So I was taking comfort in the fact that I had at least been proactive and that eventually I was going to capture some gold.
Well, before we wrap up here, I don't know if you've ever thought of it in this definition, but when I'm out training, I call this loaded my mental chamber. And what you got to envision this, I'm looking at a six shooter, and there'd be six bullets in a chamber. And the chamber is all I'm seeing, the six holes. And in those holes, there would be how much time I've already thought of this, how much time I want to spend training, what movement I'm going to do, how much I'm going to load on the bar, how successful I'm going to be with the bar, how much time I'm going to take to relax, and obviously the envisioning of walking back in and looking at a power rack with various statements of obviously you're going to get it, you're going to push through it, you're going to lift it, et cetera, et cetera. So if anybody had ever want to practice that, I would tell you to do that. Loaded my mental chamber. So, Mike, I'll leave you with that. Anything you want to get out, finish off. Otherwise, you know, give all the information, obviously, with your website and anything like that. Let me do mine, and then we'll talk offline briefly, if you would, please.
Sounds great, Eric. Another enjoyable conversation, as always. It's it's not just enjoyable and entertaining. It's, you know, I get something out of it. You know, there's an energy there when we talk. I always look forward to it, and it's always a blast. For the listeners, I would encourage them to check out MikeGillette.com, MikeGillette.com. That's all free content there. Just a lot of posts and thoughts and images that will hopefully fuel your enthusiasm for the journey that you are on. And there are links to other things too, social media and whatnot. But definitely check it out. It's all free stuff, and it's very much in line with the types of things that Eric and I talk about, and the whole message and mantra that Eric espouses with this podcast.
Thanks, Mike, and I appreciate the kind words. I do, and I tell you all the time offline, Mike, look, we've got some marvelous people here. Mike is just a very easy guy to connect with. We see things, I'm sure, the way we talk to one another. We see things a lot in the same light. That's a gift to be able to meet people like that. And, you know, the great things we're doing here, Mike's doing and everybody else, you know, we're trying to get this out to the mainstream here. We want... You know, I've said this, I don't know if Mike's heard me say this before. This is my opinion with everything. I'm just giving stones as an example. I don't care if you lift a 450-pound stone or a 100-pound stone. You guys are all welcome here, and you gals too. Be part of something. Be part of something that's going to stand for a long time. But I'll go on now. But this is Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We're sponsored by Dr. William Wong. What can I say? www.docspreferred.com. He sponsors me. He's on once a month. He's a great guy. What can I tell you? Like everybody around here, the support I've had, I can't thank everybody enough. Secondly, heartscollision.com. That's Alex and Lori Verardi. This is for New York State residents, 518-477-7937. And as I said, we believe in manliness. We, you know, with the sponsorship here, it's not just all weightlifting. We like people to look sharp, clothes, razors, hair. It doesn't matter. You know, you got big rigging equipment. We're with you all the way. We want to spread the word. We want men to be men and women to be women. It's very important. We all have different roles in society. But we're a big believer, especially our young guys coming up. I don't want you wearing your sister's jeans, man. That's just my pride. We want, and especially you look at Mike, you got to go out on Facebook or his website, you might have too. I'm not sure he can comment on that. You look at those little gymnasts, man. I'm telling you, they got those steel eyes. That's what I said before. It's like a shark, man, just before they bite you. Then you see their eyes turn over and they're white. That's what it's all about. Next, Sorenex. They're sponsoring me, too, for Iceland. They sent me the trap bar. Sorenex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Tell Bert or Richard, Eric sent you. Next, we got Top 10 Ways to Build Mind and Muscle, short ebook. Like I said, basic, right to the point, no models, no nothing. Get used to it, man. You want to get big and strong and be a steward of strength and mind and help people? That's the stuff you got to occupy your mind with. Forget the rest of the bullshit. Winner Circle, 12 modules. If you liked what Mike and I spoke about today, you're going to hear plenty of that. 27 to 32 minutes. Lots of routines. You want to take the whole routine I use, use it. You want to take pieces of it, I guarantee it, you will make gains. I've experimented with stuff. We're going to show a lot of stuff here. Being alone, I'll say this. I didn't like the way things went down with my brother and my best buddy. It was pretty rough for 10 years, not even talking to him over a big brouhaha with training. But I got to tell you, sitting here, it was the best thing I ever did. I would never have gone to Iceland. I never would have got into power rack training, et cetera, et cetera. There's a big story here. I want everybody to come in. We're 1 million strong. We're going to get there. Don't forget about sponsorship, $300 a month. Chris Bigelow will build any type of branding. This guy's phenomenal. He does both websites. You can get a hold of him at monsterdevelopment.com or 800-687-1609. FiorelloBarbellCo.com, MotivationMuscle.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Write me a review. We get 5 stars on every review, and I thank everybody. If you want to get a hold of me, FiorelloBarbell@nightcap.rr.com. If you'd like Mike and I to do a specific show, Mike is going to be on here every month now. I'm sure he and I can come up with something. Let's see, Facebook, Fiorello Barbell, Motivation Muscle, Twitter, Fiorello Eric, Don't forget, if somebody seeks you out in the concrete jungle or in the gym, be a steward of strength. Show them what you are inside, man. That's what matters. That will beat anybody on the outside that's got a weak constitution. I'm sure Mike can attest to that totally. Next, as my mom used to always tell us when we were kids, don't be afraid to say hello or give somebody a smile. It might be the only contact they have with anybody that day. I think that's sad as shit, but it's out there all over the place. Don't be afraid to show you got some class. Do that. And last but not least, go out today and lift some big hunks of iron and take some stones and turn them into dust. Remember, we're motivation, muscle. We are domination, and we are going to take the world, as my buddy Chris Bigelow says. 1 million strong. Well, Mr. Gillette, Mike, sir, thank you for being on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Pleasure, Eric.
This is for Mike Gillette. This is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening. Mike will be on next month, and I've got Logan on this afternoon, and I've got, I think, three more at the end of the week. So we'll be talking to you. Have a great week, and go out and do something.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.